All right, we're back on Third String Podcast. It's been a long time. I think 2 weeks since we recorded one. It's been pretty busy. Pete, I know you've been on the road. You were in Colorado, so we'll have to hear a little bit about that. Hopefully you stayed warm and dry. But I see that you have the pumpkin spice latte there, ready to go. I'm drinking my much more boring choice of water.
Zach, obviously you can't see it. I have a pumpkin spice latte sitting here, and I also have the Redskins on the iPad
who are
currently beating the Dallas Cowboys 13-7. That won't hold, but no big deal. Life isn't bad, man. Mid-October, missed talking to you, but yeah, I was in Colorado last week where it was 22 degrees and snowing for all of you keeping track at home. So that was a little rough, but otherwise, man, you can't beat Colorado. Can we take the podcast on the road to Colorado?
I strongly support this idea. This is a great idea. You know, I mean, you know that I'm thinking about moving out there in the next year or two, because I have some family out there and family who are trying to get back there. And so there's a good possibility, greater than zero, I would say, that we'll end up there. But it's a great town. I mean, I know Colorado's not a town, but where you were in the Springs is a great town. Denver's a great town. Lots of cool stuff going on there. And you're so close to so much outdoor recreation. If you're a skier, so much there. If you're not a skier, you're more of a summer sports person, hiking, camping. Like, it has everything to offer.
It does. And I mean, it has everything you and I are looking for. It has great outdoors, like you mentioned.
Yep.
Obviously, a great nightlife scene. But neither of us are going out a lot at night, but there's some good food, great breweries, and professional sports. I mean, what else do I need?
Yeah, I mean, the Avalanche, the Nuggets, the Rockies, and the Broncos, those are all pretty good franchises in that town, and lots of fan base support. And then in the Springs, there's a AAA minor league team.
Sky Sox, right?
Exactly. I don't know if they're still called that, because I know they've changed leadership. They've changed hands. They were a Brewers farmhand team.
Okay.
Let me see. I'll look it up while you're riffing. Tell me more about about your Colorado trip.
Dude, it was just, I mean, like I said, it was snowing. So we got in Saturday afternoon, so I got to watch College Game Day on a United flight, which, by the way, they give you 20 free minutes, and then they start charging you. So I got halfway through Corso's headgear, or not headgear, but Corso's picks. He's getting ready to put on the headgear, and then United Airlines asked me to swipe the credit card, and I thought about it. I really did. I didn't, but I thought about it.
How much was it? Was this like an $8?
It was like $5.99 on a 90-minute flight. Like, are you kidding me? I just put on some other podcasts and called it good.
It's so tough to justify those expenses. I almost never will spend money on things like that.
No. Yeah. So we got it on Saturday, and it was 68 degrees when we landed, which you can't beat in Colorado. Sunday morning, we had to be at work early, so I was up at about 4:45, and it was 22 degrees and snowing. And
oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was rough. You know, FaceTiming the family from Colorado, I'm sitting in the rental car at like 9 a.m. Colorado time, and it's snowing all around me, and it's 78 degrees in Vegas, and my kids are playing outside. So it's just, we're an hour and a half plane trip away, but might as well be a lifetime away.
That is so weird.
It's good, but man, I love Colorado. I really do. Did some hiking, obviously did some work, got to some good breweries. No complaints here. No complaints whatsoever.
I'm not sure how much time you spent in Denver, but do you have a preference between the two, Denver or Colorado Springs?
Oh, it's tough. I've spent more time in Colorado Springs in my adult life, so I know Colorado Springs a little earlier. I know where all the good breweries are. I can get to Garden of the Gods. I can kind of get all around to the parks. Denver is still such a big city that I'm still trying to figure out. I think I have more exploring to do in Denver, but right now I think I'm partial
to
Colorado Springs just because I know it. So.
Yeah, Colorado Springs is much more manageable, and I spent a few years there, so I feel like I kind of know my way around the town. Denver feels a lot more foreign to me, but for that reason too, it's just there's a lot more excitement, I think, in Denver, because there's more stuff going on. It's a much bigger city, so it makes sense. I have an update, by the way, on the Sky Sox. So the Sky Sox, you go to the Wikipedia page, it's kind of like a eulogy. It says the Sky Sox were a AAA baseball team.
Oh, no.
They are no longer based out of Colorado Springs. They're rebranding to the San Antonio Missions. They're moving to San Antonio, Texas. They are remaining a AAA affiliate of the Brewers. And then I went to the Security Service Field Wikipedia page, which is the stadium in the Springs where the Sky Sox used to play.
Yeah.
And it says they will host, beginning in 2019, a yet-to-be-named team of the Pioneer League. So the Pioneer League,
that sounds like an independent league where there's like 20 people in the stands every day.
Essentially, yeah. Yeah. It's technically not independent. It is in the official minor league system, but it's like it's like the second lowest tier of minor league stuff. So
I went to an independent league baseball team. I told you we got one in North Dakota before I left, and that was great.
Right.
But about 8 years ago, I went to an independent league in West Texas, like on a random Friday night, went out to see them, all these guys. This is like their second or third job. And every time a home player hit a home run, they would, no kidding, walk around and take a collection, no kidding, in a hat. And it was a little old lady who would pass around. They would take
a
collection
for the player?
For the guy hitting home. Yeah, for the guy who hit the home run. And I mean, obviously no one pressured you, but it was made pretty clear that you're going to put $5 in the bucket for the kid who just hit the home run.
That's so funny.
I mean, they talk about all these kids were working at the Texas Roadhouse,
right,
and hotel managers. And it's just the life that these guys in the independent minor league system is just crazy, what these guys have to go through in order to try to make it big. And independent league, these guys are all 19, 20, as far from the majors as you can get. So it's something.
Well, I know you're not a big
San Antonio.
I know you're not a big Instagram guy, but have you seen the Instagram account Minor League Grinders? Have I told you about this already?
No, I haven't seen this one.
So it's pretty ridiculous, but it's basically a bunch of minor league players documenting the horrible living conditions of a minor league baseball player. It's really bad. It's really bad. Yeah, they're turning paper plates into shower shoes because they don't have shower shoes to shower post game, and it's really bad. Some of it's a bit over the top, but you should check it out, Minor League Grinders on Instagram.
I'll give that a look. Normally I only check out the third string Instagram, but I'll expand my horizons for this important occasion.
Yeah, that sounds good. What should we talk about today? We've got a few minutes here. We could talk about some football, talk about some baseball, lots of stuff going on in baseball. Maybe we should start there.
Yeah, let's pivot to the exact opposite of people who have made it out of the minor leagues. And obviously the Los Angeles Dodgers last night beating the Brewers in pretty convincing fashion. Dude, my biggest takeaway is not even that the Dodgers won. It's that I don't like Manny Machado anymore. What happened?
You don't
to
like Manny Machado? So you're buying
you
into the villain.
The way he was acting.
You're
in
buying into the
that
villain of
awful.
October storyline.
Oh. Yeah, we got to have a villain. Manny Machado made it easy.
That's true.
I mean, it's not even. I mean, the Red Sox are in it for what feels like the 15th time in 16 years. And how do you root for Manny Machado right now? I can root for the Dodgers, but man, that was disappointing.
I think it's really hard to root for the Red Sox. I would say that my feelings on this are, you know, and I don't have a rooting interest in either team, as you know.
Yep.
I would say that normally I root against the Red Sox just because I see them as like the typical American League team, and you know, win by the home run, the designated hitter. JD Ramirez, yep, of course, one of the best hitters in the league, and he's playing from the DH spot this year. So, like, there's just things about that the baseball purist in me doesn't like, and I tend to root for the National League team. So I don't have a rooting interest other than, I would say, like, maybe by default I would go against the Red Sox. But I have to be honest and say that the Red Sox have the more compelling personalities to me. Like,
yep,
I like Benintendi. I like Betts a ton. He's probably my favorite player in the game right now.
Did you see Mookie might be playing at second?
I did, yes.
Boy,
and
this is going
to
be
he has the talent level to do that. He's incredible.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr., basically their outfield is so much fun.
Yeah.
Rafael Devers as well. Like, they just have a lot of young, exciting personalities on that team that I like rooting for individually. The Dodgers, I think, are easier to root for collectively. Like, this is their second trip in 2 years. They got denied last year by the Astros. They can come back, redemption tour, yada, yada, yada. But there's also a lot to dislike about the Dodgers collectively. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that they have such a high payroll, the fact that they go out and get the star of the trade deadline in Manny Machado, right? The All-Star break, and then he turns into this sort of October quasi-villain. Like, I don't know. There's just a lot less to like about the Dodgers in that way. And there's no compelling singular personalities on the Dodgers, I feel like. Like, I don't know. Who are you going to put? I mean, Kershaw, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm rooting for Clayton. I'm so tired of this Kershaw doesn't do anything in the playoffs argument. And it's valid. I think that's what drives me nuts. But I'm rooting for Clayton Kershaw.
Well, I think it's valid insofar as like Clayton Kershaw has not won a World Series. You know,
yeah.
So yeah, he hasn't had success in that way. But if you look at his splits for the playoffs, he's still a premier baseball pitcher. You know, he's not like getting chased out of the second inning in every start he makes. Like, yeah, sure, he's had the doozies, but he's also had these brilliant starts where he's shut down the opposition entirely. So yeah, I think the criticism is valid insofar as he hasn't won a World Series yet, and it will be valid until he does that. But I still think that, I mean, yeah, he's a good postseason pitcher. He's been there enough times. He's done enough postseason work for us to point to, and like it's no longer a small sample size for us to say like he's still a good pitcher in the postseason. And I think it's just unfair for us to say like he's not clutch or he doesn't show up in these big games, because he, I mean, he has. It's just that he has enough of a body of work that we can also find the doozies. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In some ways, it almost feels like this Chris Sale argument going on right now, that Chris Sale was this like rags to riches guy.
Yeah,
he was totally. So down on his luck for years and years. Didn't Chris Sale win the Cy Young a few years ago? Like, we're acting like he has come from nowhere and suddenly is headlining an all-star staff when he was washed up. Dude is a Cy Young winner, guys. Come on. But while I'm on the topic of Chris Sale, did you see...
I was going to ask you this. Chris Sale was in the hospital. I'm pretty sure I know where you're going with this. Yeah. So for our listeners, if you didn't see it, Chris Sale was in the hospital with what sounded like a stomach virus, because it was like some sort of like stomach infection or something. And
it was a stomach infection.
I thought like, you know, I think probably like most of us, like a gastrointestinal infection of some sort, you know. So he was in the hospital. But he was asked about why. He has a history of joking about these things, by the way. So I'm not sure if I believe him, but he was asked about what it was. And he said that he had a little belly button bling that got infected. And that's what landed him in the hospital.
In my heart, it's 100% serious, because that, for some reason, that makes me like Chris Sale more. Like, I can't even explain it.
I read that and I was just like, wait a second, what did he just say? This is not the Chris Sale. Like, this guy who's, how tall is Chris Sale? Like, 6'3"? He's a tall, scrawny, skinny dude, you know, kind of a nerdy type. Like, you wouldn't think of him as anywhere close to the guy who'd have a belly button ring. I have to think if I'm a betting man, I have to think he's joking about this, right? He can't be serious. He can't have a belly button ring.
I mean, yeah, but isn't it more compelling if he's not kidding around and this is serious? Isn't that the better story here?
Yeah, it is for sure. 100%. 100%.
So give me your 30-second preview on this series. So obviously we got Chris Sale taking the mound in Boston on Tuesday. I think Boston's got to be the favorite just based on their regular season body of work, how they performed in the playoffs. But what's your initial hack? What are you looking for on this one?
Well, yeah, I think these two teams are going to be well matched. Ultimately, they're the best teams coming out of their divisions according to the championship series results. I really wish, though, that we were correct in our prediction of the Brewers. I think the Brewers Red Sox matchup would be just much more fun.
Yep.
And I think the bullpen of the Brewers versus the sluggers of the Red Sox would just make for better late inning baseball than what we're going to end up getting. I think in game one, we're going to look for home field advantage to play a big role. And I think Boston comes away with a one zip lead because that home field advantage is not negligible in this type of environment. The Dodgers are going to be traveling across three time zones. I think the Red Sox are the farthest team from the Dodgers geographically in the majors. I'd have to be fact checked on that, but I'm pretty sure. I think we'll see the Red Sox come away with a win. What about you?
Yeah, I definitely like the Red Sox, especially in a Game 1 Chris Sale matchup. I'm just so interested to see how this Red Sox offense is going to perform outside of Boston. Obviously, Chavez Ravine is a very different place to play than Fenway Park.
For
Fenway
sure.
Park is not a hitter's park, but at the same time, it's not the huge open space that the Dodgers call home. So I think it's going to be interesting how Alex Cora can figure out how to kind of retool this offense, because I don't think that they're going to be hitting 3 to 4 home runs a game like we've seen even through the playoffs against both the Yankees and then what they were doing here in the ALCS.
Right.
That was more of a grinded out series than I thought the Red Sox necessarily had in them. I mean, I thought the Red Sox were probably the better team walking in, but I was surprised in the way that they beat Houston. So
I sort of had the opposite take. I thought that the Astros were the better team walking in. I thought the Astros really had been the better team all season, and that it had just been sort of a lot of bad luck that had ended up with the differential in the postseason record. But the Red Sox, to their credit, came out of there looking like the legitimately better team. So I stand corrected on that.
I think I was just very, very surprised at how well I thought the pitching for Boston performed. I mean, you, Ishan, and I talked about that in our preseason baseball overlook, that we didn't think the Red Sox necessarily had the rotation to get him there.
Right.
I think I was a little higher on Chris Sale, but otherwise we all thought that the rotation was going to be pretty mediocre, I'd say, even that they were going to be okay, and it would be JD Martinez and maybe Mookie Betts who would kind of propel them through the regular season and make them a wild card favorite. And I think their ability to not only start but to finish games has been pretty impressive down the stretch. And And I know that this sounds almost like I'm kidding, but I always think it's impressive when a 100-game winner can sustain through the playoffs, because we so often see, I mean, you think of the Mariners from the early 2000s.
Oh, totally.
Teams,
yeah.
Who just dominated the regular season, just cannot figure out a way to win four straight games when they have to, when they have to put all their cards on the table and push all their chips in. So I've been really impressed the last 2 years, actually, with both the Red Sox and the Astros and how they've performed in the postseason. So, I took the Yankees to win that first series against the Red Sox, and obviously I was sorely mistaken, no surprise, but sorely mistaken. And I think the way that the Red Sox have been winning has made me a believer that Alex Cora in his first year might know what he's doing, has a good hitting coach, obviously, right, working for him as sure. well. But yeah, I've been really surprised at the way the Red Sox have continued to win.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, I was looking historically, these teams have never... but in 2018 they had not met in the regular season either. So when they did interleague play, neither of them faced each other. So I was gonna look to there for some clues, but there are no clues to be found. It'll be interesting though. I think it's unfortunate that these two teams are here, because I really wanted to see a scenario in which the Dodgers did not beat the Brewers, and yeah. I would have liked to see the Yankees match up against the Brewers. I think you'd have like the team that best typifies evil empire baseball versus small market team that's vastly overperforming projections and all that. I just think that'd be a more fun narrative than this like West Coast versus East Coast thing we have going on.
Yeah. And it felt like the Milwaukee Brewers, we talked about it in the off season. We talked about as we were getting towards the trade deadline. They just seemed to be kind of putting together a team in the way that you want to see it, that they weren't just signing every right. big name free agent. They
exactly.
were making trades. They were going after guys who were not number one on the trade block. They seem to be fitting pieces together instead of just throwing these huge contracts at people. So in a way, the Brewers were doing it like you want them to do it, and not just assembling a team like the Dodgers or the Yankees
right.
or even the Red Sox this year have kind of been doing it. So
right.
I totally agree. I was disappointed in how it went last night. I think I was surprised to see Yasiel Puig as kind of the hero. He's
yeah.
been the... You and I have talked. We like the bat flip, but I don't think that there's a ton I love about Yasiel Puig otherwise. I like his effort. I like the bat flips. But
his effort
when he wants to
give his yeah. effort. It's not always
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Very, very true. Very true. So maybe it was a little redemption and he needed that. I just don't know what to expect with this Dodger team going into the World Series. I think
right.
Cody Bellinger could be an X factor. I'm really hoping Clayton Kershaw can be an X factor just so he gets a little redemption. But otherwise, I don't really know what to expect out of this Dodger team going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it'll be interesting. Should we pivot, though, and talk about football a little bit in the remaining time we have?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
I just looked on ESPN.com. Looks like you're, and you have the game right in front of you. Looks like 13-10 now. Redskins, is that right?
Yeah, they're getting ready to blow it, though. Mark my words. They're getting ready to blow it.
So we have, what do we have left in the quarter? We're about halfway through the fourth?
No, we got about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
Dallas is driving. Skins up by three.
Uh-oh.
There's been no offense in this game whatsoever.
This is a pretty
rough.
Well, the Redskins have three of your top offensive playmakers out, right? Chris Thompson.
Yeah, they do. Oh, I think they just recovered a fumble and walked into the
Whoa.
End zone. I'll take that. I'll
okay.
take that. But yeah, the Redskins have been really banged up this year, and not in the ways that they're normally banged up. It's been things like Adrian Peterson not 100%, or Jamison Crowder, who I think right now you could argue is their number one receiver, being
right.
out a lot. And Alex Smith, who I thought might have been a step up from Kirk Cousins in game managerial statistics.
I think that's probably
less,
true.
Less a little athleticism. I still think Kirk is a more athletic guy.
Yeah.
He hasn't wowed me yet. And that's not to say that he won't do good things down the stretch. But I think the Redskins have been... okay, not great. I mean, they're sitting on 3-3. They've been a 500 team for about the last 10 years, so
right.
I think we're getting exactly what we expect out of the Redskins. But the NFC East overall, man, what is going on? Obviously, your Eagles aren't clicking like we thought they would. The Cowboys.
I had to go to the gym this afternoon, Pete, and play some basketball just to blow off steam after that Eagles game. It was just so bad watching it. 17-0, we go into the fourth quarter with a 17-0 lead. And then we give up two quick touchdowns to Cam Newton just launching the ball downfield, and our secondary
yep.
just forgetting how to cover guys. They haven't really been that good at that this year, period. But so that happens. And then we can't even hold them to a field goal after that. We give up another touchdown. So now we're down 21-17. We respond with what looks like it's going to be a game-winning drive with, you know, a minute 30 down to a minute on the clock. And then Carson Wentz almost throws two consecutive picks, which was, you know, your heart drops to the floor. And then he fumbles, and we don't recover. And even if we did recover, you know, out of time, like, it would just be a disaster. So that was my afternoon.
Is it just the defense is breaking down across the NFC East and every one of these teams is off? I think
that's
honestly, I think you could say the NFC East is the worst division right now in football.
I think AFC South is still kind of a garbage fire. I was watching the Texans Jags game earlier today as well. I was flipping back and forth because that's what was on CBS and Fox in my area.
Yeah.
Also pretty bad. Houston won that. They are now a 4-3 team. And in sole possession of the lead for AFC South. So, I mean, now granted, it looks like Washington's going to win this, and they're going to be 3-3 in sole possession of the lead in the NFC East. So maybe it is the worst. I don't know, but it doesn't really seem to be like a defensive breakdown problem because, I don't know, the offenses have been really not clicking.
Yeah,
like the Philly offense at times today looked brilliant, but at the end of the day, we scored 17 points. The Cowboys Redskins right now have a combined 30 points in the whole game between both teams.
Yeah.
And I mean, do we need to say anything about Eli Manning?
Boy, how long before Eli finally sits down? And that is not just because I'm a Redskins fan, but that team, I will actually go out of my way not to watch the Giants when they're on any kind of Monday night, Sunday night football.
Who would want
it's
to?
Awful
Absolutely.
Football.
It's horrible.
Saquon Barkley is the only good thing, and then you get the drama with Odell Beckham. But if you're watching to see good football, you're not going to get it in New York right now, right? We talked about it on draft day. How did they not go after a quarterback? And obviously Saquon has been great, but you don't, in 2018, you don't build a team around a running back. You build a team around a quarterback, and they got to bring someone in to learn from Eli. He didn't have to start this year, but they had to bring someone in to start backing up Eli. And I think the Giants are 3 years away from being any good right now, honestly. They just don't have the pieces.
Yeah, this is interesting. I was, as you know, I'm a big fan of the Bill Simmons podcast, and he was saying recently, after watching the Eagles Giants game last Thursday, that he's changed his mind on the Barkley signing. He originally said they should have drafted a quarterback, but after watching that game specifically and more broadly, like Barkley this whole season, Simmons is saying he now thinks the Giants made the right move. And even though they could have had their quarterback in Sam Darnold, for example, they went and got Barkley, and he looks like a generational talent who runs like somebody we haven't seen in decades. So what do you make of that? Legit or not?
I agree, but you don't get more than 4 to 5 years out of a great running back. I mean, look at guys like Adrian Peterson, who came back from an ACL tear in 2011. Right. And I mean, the Vikings still moved on from him because you don't have the durability at the running back position anymore. I mean, outside of the Rams, name one team right now who has a solid number one back, besides Saquon in New York, obviously, who isn't doing some kind of running back by committee right now. With the RPO offense,
right,
you build around a quarterback who can manage a game, make those quick decisions like your boy Carson Wentz can do, and you kind of just let the team run around them. So I think, yeah, you'll get at least 4 to 5 good years out of Saquon, but I don't think that's what the Giants need. I think they needed a guy who could start being a leader under center, because Eli is clearly not that guy anymore. I mean, you look when Peyton was hurt and barely hanging on, and that might not be a fair comparison to Eli, but at the same time, you still had a leader under center who you knew was going to do enough to put the offense in a position to win, and you don't get that with Eli Manning right now, I'd argue.
Yeah. Okay, well, let me... I don't know. Let me pose this to you, because I don't necessarily agree with Simmons, but I'm intrigued that this person who is a relatively high profile sports media personality is now publicly endorsing the Saquon Barkley signing. Because I feel like when it happened, everyone was like, no, you guys need a quarterback. Like we watched Eli Manning play in 2017, 18, and he doesn't have much left in the tank. And I think that was pretty apparent to everybody who wasn't like in the Giants front office. So I've been thinking about this a lot, actually, over the past week since Simmons first came out and said this. And I think, like, my counter to you is, yes, you need a quarterback who can manage the game in this this RPO-heavy scheming that we have going on in the NFL. But does that person need to be someone who you get in the first round necessarily? Like, does that person need to be a generational-type talent? Or can you scheme more effectively. Like, I think Jared Goff, granted, this maybe undercuts my argument because Jared Goff was number one pick, but I don't think he really should have been. I think that Sean McVay is making him play like an MVP this season because he's able to scheme effectively for the quarterback. So I feel like if you can do that, you can settle with the quarterback who's not at the very top. And then, like, go back to the 2007 draft where the Vikings picked up Peterson at number seven. The number one draft pick in there is like the biggest bust of all time in the NFL draft, Jamarcus Russell, who like everyone thought was going to go transform the league as a quarterback. So the Raiders got him, and then, you know, he was out of the league just a bit later, having never really done anything. So yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm just throwing that out there for thought. Like, would you rather have Jamarcus Russell or Adrian Peterson, even if Adrian Peterson now, less than 10 years later, is a shell of what he was?
No, that's a fair point. I think at the end of the day, the schemes are just as important. Yes. But I agree with you. You don't need a first rounder. I think we've seen a lot of good third, fourth round guys. I mean, honestly, you think of guys like Kirk Cousins right now, who
right.
made a heck of a lot of money because of his ability to kind of adapt to the schemes that Washington was putting around him. And then right. he was able to walk away with a contract when he went to Minnesota. And I think you look at all these guys, and outside of your Deshaun Watsons and, oh, I'm trying to think of another quarterback who we're kind of putting on that level right now. I mean, Pat Mahomes is in a great scheme. I think Pat Mahomes yeah. is a fantastic athlete, but I think he's in a great scheme that right. Andy Reid knows how to coach an offense. He can't coach a playoff game, but he knows how to coach an offense.
Well, I think maybe look at like last year, Case Keenum, right? Like, that's a guy who was never lighting up the league before, but then you yeah. put him in the right scheme, you give him a coach who can work to Case Keenum's strengths, then he's going to do really well. And I mean, he looked like an MVP last year and before the Eagles kind of dismantled them in the NFC Championship. Like, up to that point, the Vikings were Super Bowl favorites.
Yeah. Well, and maybe this goes back to why neither you and I were very high on guys like John Gruden, where we yeah. just thought that coaches today have to understand how the game has shifted to 2018, and you need an athletic guy who can make decisions on the fly, and you don't necessarily need just a pocket passer right. to stand in there and chuck it 40 yards downfield every time.
Right.
So I think the game has changed so much that I think if Peyton Manning came up as a rookie today out of Tennessee, obviously Tennessee couldn't produce a quarterback like that right now in the collegiate game, but I don't think Peyton is nearly as effective today as he was in 1999 when he came up.
Yeah, totally. Totally
so I think the game has just changed so much, and the rules have changed to enable the offense so much. And mm-hmm. this is not a shot against the rules, but things have just changed. And your Eli Mannings of the world, I don't see these kind of guys having continued success in this game at this point. I think defensive linemen have gotten too big. I think linebackers have gotten too fast. It's why the triple option doesn't right. work in the NFL. I think the defense has just gotten so fast that you need a guy who can do more than just manage a game.
Right.
Honestly, I think that's where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
That was a long way to get there, but I think that's what I was going for.
No, I think that makes sense. Well, before we sign off here, any thoughts on the NFL season so far? Anything that surprised? Let me make it a little more specific. Are any teams surprising you with how they're performing versus your expectations for them earlier this year?
I think overall on the league, the parity of the NFL that we kind of dance around every year, I think it's been on display at a tremendous level this year.
Yeah.
I think I'll start with my biggest disappointment has to be, honestly, the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, I know Jimmy Garoppolo's been hurt and he's been out. The 49ers are sitting like 1-6 right
yeah,
now. I
really
thought
bad.
Kyle Shanahan was going to be putting them in the right direction, and they appear to have taken several steps back and regressed. And I think you called the Kansas City Chiefs better than I did. I thought the Chargers would be easily beating them in that division in the AFC West. And I think the Chiefs, even more than the Patriots right now, are the team to beat. I know that the Patriots took them in a head-to-head matchup, but you watch the way the Chiefs are doing business right now, and I actually think they're the most fun team to watch, even over the LA Rams, who I get a lot of their games here. I think that the Chiefs are the most fun to watch. So that's been a fun surprise, because the AFC otherwise has been uninspiring, to say the least.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think the 49ers is a good identification. I've been surprised with the Redskins, actually. Not that this is like a juggernaut at all, but I just am surprised that of the teams in the NFC East, Redskins, Cowboys, Eagles, I think we all knew the Giants were going to be dumpster fire, but of those three, I'm surprised that it's the Redskins that have kind of sifted out at the top. I've also been surprised and impressed with the Bears and what they've done in the wake of the Khalil Mack signing. They're playing close games with good teams today. They I don't know if you saw the end of the Chicago-New England game, but that Hail Mary from Mitchell Trubisky was about 1 yard away from tying the game, which would have been super exciting. It just
Patriots defense on the one, man. Ask ask Pete Carroll how that works.
Yes, seriously. But that was like the closest that I can remember in recent history a Hail Mary coming to winning the game, and it was exciting to watch it live.
Yeah,
and then just also annoying to see the Patriots be able to force him down at the one. So anyway, I think that's what I would call out. How about Drew Brees though? I have to give a word of appreciation to one of the best quarterbacks of our era. Super exciting to see him pass Peyton Manning for the passing yardage record. And then today he hit 500 passing touchdowns, and he's one of only three quarterbacks to do that, right? Manning, Favre, and Brady. So pretty exciting.
Yeah. Did you see that video that Peyton Manning posted?
No, I did not. I heard about it though. I need to see it because you're the second person now to tell me about this, and it sounds hilarious.
It's good. I won't ruin it for you. For any of our listeners out there, go check it out. It's like 3.5 minutes, and it's like a Saturday Night Live skit that Peyton Manning is doing.
Send me the link. I'll put it in the show notes for our listeners.
Yeah, it's good. I'll send it over right after this. But yeah, I'm happy for Drew Brees. I just wish New Orleans would put a team together around him. It seems like if they're not scoring 50 points and then winning by three, that they're not really in these games. So you have to imagine that Drew Brees is getting frustrated. There's no way he leaves New Orleans at this age and with everything he's done in New Orleans, but it's disappointing with these teams who have these generational quarterbacks and these guys who we will remember forever that we can't put a team around them in order to continue taking them to the next level.
Right.
I think you look at teams like New England, obviously that we've talked about that extensively, but otherwise you look at maybe Green Bay as another team who can at least keep enough tools around a generational quarterback, but it still takes Aaron Rodgers doing magic every single week. And I don't know what deals he made with the devil in order to persevere like he has.
Yeah, my goodness.
It's impressive outside of what those two teams have been able to do.
Also want to give a shout out to the Browns. I think you said they could win 7 or 8 wins. I said their ceiling was 5 and they're on pace to have 5 wins this year. So good.
Two overtime losses haven't helped my over-unders.
Credit to Hugh Jackson for taking a very talented roster and getting them 2.5 wins on the season. So
not great. And did you see they lost on a 60-yard field goal today? I mean, what is this?
I also saw them. It was Jamie Collins, of course, who the Browns got from the Patriots a year ago. He got an interception in overtime and had the Browns in position for a long field goal, but I was like, okay, this has to be the game because this was at the point where this was after several possessions, change of hands. So first score wins. And I was like, okay, this is going to be a field goal for the Browns. They're going to win it. I walked away, played some basketball, came back. The Browns had lost. So in typical Cleveland Browns fashion, Hugh Jackson continues.
The only way the Browns can lose is heartbreaking.
I need to talk to Hugh Jackson about like his employment tips for staying employed when you're terrible at your job. And like, how does Mike McCoy get bounced around from three different teams, and Hugh Jackson still has the Haslam family standing behind him saying he's our guy?
He's got to have some dirt on him.
Yeah.
Got to have some dirt on him.
He must, right? He must. All right, Pete, I think that's it for today. Thanks so much for doing this. As always, for our listeners, thanks for listening. You can follow us on Twitter. Pete is at Pete_Lead. I'm at Zach Rippin. Until next time, thanks for listening to the First Round Podcast.